This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Jan Risher is our guest today, freelance writer, author of Long Story Short, Year of the Water Goat, world traveler. She also writes a weekly column for the Sunday edition of the Daily Advertiser in Lafayette. As president of ShiftKey, a content marketing firm, she enables businesses to tell their story in an effective manner. Jan also recently launched a podcast, The Virtual Casserole, for a community who needs casserole, but not necessarily the actual food, the warmth that comes when love is slated. And before I welcome Jan to the show, we were laughing before the podcast started. I want to give my favorite quote of Jan's, and this was back in 2016. "When necessary, we can remember life is indeed too short to be spent with nincompoops." And Jan, this is exactly why I asked you to come with us and tape this podcast for the next 30, 45 minutes. I respect you. I learn from you. And you bring your heart to everything you do, whether it's community activism, the clients that you represent, or just being a friend. So, Jan Risher, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
I'm very excited about this. Two Jans together. I don't know. Jan squared. There we are. There's a lot of energy here. And yeah. I've gotten to know you the past few years. You know, I've read your column, but we've interacted through serving on the News 15 KADN Community Relations Committee. Mm-hmm. I've seen you work in other community nonprofits, and you really make a difference in our community.
Well, thank you.
But we've had some things going on where I'd like to get into, you know, the engagement in our community and what you bring through your writing. We can talk about maybe how you got into writing to begin with.
Well, I come from a family of storytellers. I'm from Mississippi originally, a very small town in the middle of Mississippi called Forest. It's where I grew up and where almost all of my family still is. And, you know, I think about it a lot, and there just wasn't a lot to do.
And is Forest in Mississippi?
Well, what as my area? Mother would tell you, if you take a map of Mississippi and you fold it once like this and again like that, Forest is right there on the corner in the center of the state. Mm-hmm. And my mother would say that with the pride of someone having just won the Nobel Award, because she was so proud that Forest was in the middle of Mississippi. I'm not sure exactly why or how that affected our lives, but it meant a lot to my mother. It's 40 miles east of Jackson.
Okay.
On I-20. And it's a population 5,000. It's
always probably has been, huh?
Yeah, I think that there actually now, it's an interesting question. There are 6,000 people there because it's primarily the poultry industry is there. And over the last 15 years, many Central Americans and Mexicans have moved to Forest to supplement the poultry industry, and so it's really changed the nature of my town.
That's interesting.
Yeah, where I grew up. So it's about 25% Hispanic. When I grew up, it was 50% African American, 50% not, and now it's about 25% Mexican or Hispanic, technically.
Right. So it's grown. That 25%. Yeah, it's grown.
But it's just, you know, it's interesting to watch rural communities experience growing pains and change.
And that's going on nationally.
Right.
The trends I've seen, it's not just Forest, Mississippi.
Right.
It's every state
right.
is really changing. The demographics are shifting quickly.
But to get back to the story, there just wasn't a lot going on. And so my family, both of my parents, well, my mom was the youngest of 12 children, and my father's mother was the second oldest of 12 children. And everybody was just in that area, pretty much.
So that was the population.
When I moved away, I moved out to Nevada when I was 23, and a friend of mine said, "Well, aren't you a member of AAA?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, what would you do if your car broke down?" And I genuinely thought about it. I was like, well, I would just wait until one of my aunts or uncles passed. But, you know, it's really special to grow up with that kind of love surrounding you. And, you know, what a privilege to grow up with that kind of love. Right. I mean, all these people who would pick me up when my car broke down or take me one place or the other, they all poured their love into me. And as I have grown up, I have realized that, you know, we are the lucky ones. Not everybody has that opportunity.
Right. You are very fortunate to have a large family.
Well, but just people who loved me and poured their love into me. And I think, you know, one of the things you talked about was, I mean, I really do try to engage in the community and to encourage other people to do what they can do. And I try myself to do what I can do to make the world a better place. And I'm lucky to and privileged to be here and to have had all the opportunities that I've had.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I know you moved here in the early, like 2001?
2001, yeah. The very end of 2001.
You and your husband moved here.
Yes, we came here for his job.
Uh-huh. And so what, you've been a writer, I'm sure, longer than that. What prompted you to go into writing? Because it's the heart that you bring when you speak and when you write.
Well, my 11th grade, I'd always loved storytelling, and my 11th grade English teacher and encouraged me. She thought that I was a good writer. And I watched The Little Women recently
on
PBS, and I just identified so much with Jo. And I just remember growing up I was a big reader growing up, and every story that I followed, I always identified with the writer or the storyteller. Yeah. I thought that there was such honor in that, really. Mm-hmm. So from the time, though, Donna McLean, my 11th grade English teacher, I knew that that would always be a part of me. But I went to college and I studied English education, and I was a high school English teacher for a while in Mississippi for 2 years. Before moving out west. Mm-hmm. But, and at heart, I'm still a teacher. But whatever I do, I'm able to bring writing and storytelling into it. My advice to students is if you can write, you know, if you're able to be a good writer,
you can do just about anything. You know.
Because being a good writer is really about thinking clearly and being able to organize your thoughts.
Right.
And if you are able to do those two things, the world's your oyster.
I think so. You know? And we do have two students here with us, Emma Bush and Kelly Swift, and I think that's wise words, whether you want to be an attorney, a writer, even doctors and people that are in, you know, the sciences, they have to be able to communicate what they need, and it's a gift that you have. So,
Well, thank you. But so, it's so much just about getting those thoughts organized and knowing what questions to ask. And being a writer also gives you that privilege and opportunity to ask whatever questions you want. So
yeah, people do respond to
people want to tell you their stories.
Right. So when you write the Sunday column, I was curious, do you go with the flow of creativity? Do you map out, like, for the next 3 months I'm going to talk about this, or do you just get up maybe Friday morning and say, oh, I've got a deadline at noon?
You know? I think that you can figure out the answer by my laughter, but now my deadline's actually Wednesday night at midnight.
Okay, so Wednesday morning, yeah.
So I usually, I try to always be looking for a theme of my week, and I also, like, make notes, so here's an idea, but I usually start writing about 7 or 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights.
And let it flow, you just kind of, I'm curious, is a writer's process for that?
You know, my column's now usually around 700, 750 words, something like that. And, you know, I there are a few times when I am just, I got nothing. You know, I am empty. And here's a tip for me. You know, you have to find what inspires you. Mm-hmm. And I have one of those PMS color. It's got like 1,000 different paint chips, basically. It's an ink color thing. Booklet. So for some reason, I can always just start flipping through that and get an idea of something to write about when I don't have an idea.
A color that moves you?
Just, yeah. That's I don't know great. Why that works, but I recognized that I could always come up with ideas when I was looking for ink colors, and I use that to my advantage. And so I do encourage other people to figure out what it is that helps you be creative, helps, you know, jog your mind in different directions. But fortunately, I usually have at least one something in my pocket to write about. And as you mentioned earlier, I love to travel. Yeah. I've been to 48 countries now, and I'm trying very hard to get to 50 soon. My goal is to get to 100 countries, but that is really hard. Once you pass about 30 countries or 35 countries, you've hit all the biggies, and now you start going to more obscure places. So, but traveling is always a great topic for writing. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'm going to be in Oregon. I've never spent time on the Oregon coast, so I'm sure that that will, you know, just taking your mind in different places. And I think that that's kind of what colors do for me sometimes. Yeah. So,
me, it's walking and music.
Well,
you know, like I'll hear a good Beatles song and it sends me back to, oh, what about this? But I like the color idea because that triggers a different area, I'm sure.
So I just sit down and start writing. And that's the other piece of advice I would give anyone who thinks that you may want to try writing or have a story to tell. Don't look for the perfect first line. Start with wherever you are and whatever words first come to mind. You can go back and edit and come get it better, but you just have to start putting the words on the paper. And I just keep going.
And you've been writing for the Advertiser since you moved here. Is that?
I started in March 2002. And actually, one of the things that I was going to tell you is I will have a book coming out this fall with the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press. And we have a working title for it, but we haven't completely confirmed it yet. But you'll be hearing more about it. I'm really excited. It'll be on at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and they'll have a book launch, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah. If I may ask a question for aspiring writers, besides the inspiration, how do you go about getting something published? Just briefly, I know that you've got a relationship, I'm sure, with people at the UL Press, but can people pitch ideas to them, or is this something that they approached you with? Like, how does that work?
Well, my advice is to get one of those books called Writer's Market and educate yourself about what people are looking, what publishers are looking for specifically, and learn about the process, and also know from the very get-go that you're probably not going to make any money whatsoever from this venture.
This will be a hard published book that you're coming out with.
What I'm coming out will be a hard published book. But I know going in that unless something weird happens, I probably am not going to actually make money from this adventure because publishing has changed so much.
Just like songwriting we talked about in a recent podcast.
It's the same thing. It's all about the internet changed everything. You know, I was with the newspaper for a long time. I loved being at the newspaper, but the internet changed that. And because it destroyed the model. And so the reason it destroyed the model is the internet allowed everyone to publish their own works. So that's actually why I started my business, because I realized that if I couldn't make it, I left the newspaper because I saw the writing on the wall that this industry was changing so much. I didn't want to be a part of such a volatile industry. And so I started offering my services to businesses who realized that there was value in having someone who knows how to write.
You can help create them, content for them.
Help
and
tell
still
their stories.
Write freelance as you do. Because I know you write for Country Roads. You write. You have another book that's been published. Was that an e-book?
An e-book. Year of the Water Goat.
Yeah. So an e-book, I guess, is a whole different process too. So what was the book called? Writers?
Writer's Market, and they publish it annually, and it's a compendium, I guess, of as many publishers as the publishers of Writer's Market can find, and it will tell you
like here's current what trends,
right? Here, well, and here's what this publisher publishes. Here's what they're looking for, and here's who to contact. Here's how to contact them.
Right.
Here's, you know, they want you to write a query letter. They want you to send the first three first three chapters, whatever it is.
So they can just kind of size you up before they spend more time.
And I would also recommend actually getting your piece written before contacting a publisher.
You can be ready to respond if they do want it.
Well, and also it's a lot harder than it looks to actually get it written. Even my book that's coming out this fall is, I call it Jan Risher's Greatest Hits. And it is a collection of columns from 2002 to 2017. I had a group of editors who helped me decide on it.
Pick up the nincompoop quote in there.
I don't remember the nincompoop. I need to find that nincompoop quote. Which column that was. But even just getting all of those columns together, it was so much harder than.
And you might have favorites that others will say, Jan, it's
let
it's not
that
really
one go.
What the public's going to want to listen to. While we're talking about content and marketing and all, I have to say I went on your ShiftKey site and went through the blogs, and there's such a rich plethora of stuff that you've done for people and the blog writing. And one of my favorites, and this is probably also something you don't remember, so I have a weird probably sense of humor, but one of the blogs you were writing at Valentine's Day what each state was Googling the most for Valentine's Day gifts. And you showed the United States, and South Dakota wanted JCPenney portraits, and Pennsylvania wanted edible underwear. We wanted silk sheets in Louisiana. But I looked at it and I thought,
keeping it classy, Louisiana.
Yeah, really. There was probably three people Googling at that point. That wasn't the whole state. But everybody else was probably at JCPenney's, looking for portraits. But I looked at that and I thought, I love this. I love the creativity and just the spark. Probably somebody in 5 minutes said, Jan, let's Google something weird and see what comes up. And it really captured, I think, the United States. So you could see the whole country. And then I ended up looking at, I didn't realize Canada went down. I was looking at the lines of how close
geography,
the states are to geography. And I had to go back and say, what did Louisiana want? But you have fun with your clients, don't you?
Oh, we do. Yeah. And I try not to work with nincompoops.
Well, I know. You shouldn't have brought that. I love that word. That's a Jan word from us growing up. Sad and ragamuffin, huh, Kelly?
Yeah. But I genuinely have relationships with my clients.
Well, I know you do with Raider Solutions.
Absolutely.
Right here.
And work with, I love to work with good folks. And try our best to get to know them and their personalities and find the stories that help best tell their stories overall. And we also work with people to do public relations and media relations. And, a lot of people don't understand that. They think, well, I've got this great thing going. The newspaper or the television station should just come tell my story.
No.
Well, because, and it goes back to the part of this, goes back, you needed public relations before the internet, but the internet has even extenuated that more, because they're so short-staffed, they aren't able to be everywhere. They aren't able to, a friend of mine once was so angry with a daily advertiser because they had put some story on the front page about a robbery or something on the very day that her son was in jeopardy.
Post.
Well, this was years ago.
Oh, okay. I know there's a recent one, though. People were complaining.
Yeah. But she was upset because it was on the very day that her son had been on high school jeopardy. And I said, well, did you tell the paper that your son was going to be on high school jeopardy? She said, no, but they should know.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, but sadly, they can't know. And so we work with a lot of different clients to help them get their story.
The press releases.
Press releases and just, connecting them to different journalists regionally and nationally. We have national clients as well. And so now with social media and traditional media, you can really bounce back and forth to get the word out there.
And I know it's like with the advertiser, Claire Taylor's been there, Amanda McElfresh, they have some longevity. But with the local TV media, typically these reporters come in for 2 years, and by the time they start understanding what's going on, they're off to another market. So they do look at social media. They're looking to see what's
press
trending.
Releases.
Yeah. So if you send a press release, mm-hmm. they're probably going to cover your story if it's right. something.
And a press release, just to educate people a little bit more about that, a press release is not some great mystery. It is really just helping, when we create a press release, help the client tell the story. Mm-hmm. And my modus operandi is always, I tell a story as if I'm telling it to my grandmother. You try not to assume any knowledge. Mm-hmm. You try to put everything in context. You know, you don't do yourselves any favors by using jargon or words that other people in other industries might not know or understand. Mm-hmm. So you try to tell it real straight. And so that we do that in a press release. And there's a lot of value in that these days, especially yeah. because journalists have so much less time than they used to.
I learned that when I was running Upper Lafayette. As mm-hmm. a lawyer, I didn't have any marketing experience, and we had no budget.
Right.
But I learned quickly the press releases, and I just sent them by email. I don't know what the proper protocol was, but they had my contact information, and I'd say, we have mm-hmm. a meeting, these are our speakers, or Upper Lafayette, this is going on, it's something you may want to check out, and for more information, go here. And they would follow up.
Right.
I think because it was respectfully done.
Right.
I knew they were busy, and you know, sometimes the press want to go to something, and then some news event happens, and they're
right.
pulled off. But you have to tell them at
that
least check
happening.
This out. Yeah.
And the other thing people sometimes are really confused about is they think that there's money attached to that. I mean, yes, you have to pay for public relations services, but it's called earned media, and you don't. Pay when the Daily Advertiser mm-hmm. writes a story about you, or when KATC or KLFY or KADN does a story about you. It's earned media. Mm-hmm. It's news for the sake of sharing news.
And they want to be relevant so that their advertisers know that, you know, people are going to read the paper or check out the news, and my ad is going to be seen by the demographic mm-hmm. that they're
right.
looking for.
Right.
So it's a real earned, you know, it's a learned art. And driving here today, Kelly was getting on me because, Jan, I've had to learn with this Discover Lafayette podcast. You know, I had Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, and then she got me on Instagram. And so I find that I'll let one go. And so she's into Instagram, and she said, Mom, people said something, and you didn't like it. And I was like, but I'm following them. And she goes, but when they say something about you. And so on the way here, she was like, oh, my gosh. And I said, well, that's why you're helping me, because this every time we add something, it's another whole layer of did I do this, did I dot that I, did I cross that T, and I'm still in the old mode, and I hate to say it, but that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
You've got to go with it or get on the side of the road, and right. others are going right. to go on in front of you. So.
And personally, sometimes we are very much like the cobbler's children who have their shoes. We don't market ourselves as
right.
well as we market our clients because we're
yeah.
busy. And
yeah.
it's hard to do all of those things. And my advice to people is, pick one at first. If you don't have unlimited resources, pick one and
you'll
do
go
it
to
really
every day.
Well.
Yeah, just get
like,
all
yeah.
over it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Fox McKithen used to say, like white on rice, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
But I tend to want to do it all, and then that's ineffective unless mm-hmm. I'm focused mm-hmm. on it. So we're lucky to have interns, and you're lucky to have staff. I know that. So the Jan Risher staff. I saw recently that a couple of things. You were... I think on one of the first, there was a storytelling event
mm-hmm,
last fall.
Mm-hmm,
can you
right.
tell me about that, the Lafayette Storytelling?
Yeah, Storytellers Project.
Mm-hmm.
That actually was organized by the Daily Advertiser, and Cox was a sponsor for it. And my understanding is this started in Arizona with a Gannett newspaper in Arizona, and they realized the value of oral storytelling, and they get community folks. I have actually done oral storytelling before, but most of the people involved are just regular folks who mm-hmm. never stood on a stage and told a story. And our theme of the first show was home. Mm-hmm. And then they had one at the beginning of the year about new beginnings.
Oh.
And then the most recent one in April was about music. And my 16-year-old daughter was in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... So I think that you're supposed to tell like 8 to 10 minute stories.
How do you get in? Like, how do you qualify?
If you are interested in it, definitely let the Daily Advertiser know, because they are always looking for different community people who have stories and are willing to stand up. And they work with the storytellers. You have like 3 or 4 coaching sessions. You have practices.
Oh. And you so you can hone your ability to present.
Well, they help you edit that story and find the best connections to the theme. It was a great experience.
Yeah, I enjoyed,
and then they do this beautiful job of editing the video as well.
Yeah, so I enjoyed your story.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Thank
home.
You. Yeah.
So you've, besides writing, you must enjoy the oral storytelling, because I know you started with your friend, Linda.
Linda Halfacre Ware.
The Virtual Casserole. And tell me about that. What got you to start a podcast?
Well, Linda and I have been friends since we were freshmen in college at Mississippi State University. Go Dogs.
Yep.
And
not too far from Forest.
About 3 hours, 2.5 hours from Forest. So, but she is a minister in Mississippi, and she's traveled a lot as well, but we've always wanted to have a radio show, and where we talked about different things.
Because you had one before, a cooking show.
I had a cooking show.
So you're a veteran.
And that was in El Paso, Texas, before we moved to Lafayette. So through the years, Linda and I have talked about doing this. And about 4 or 5 months ago, I said, we could do a podcast. And now the technology is there that we, could make it happen. We're still working on our audio. We aren't quite this professional. You guys are
fancy.
Well,
I'm so lucky to have
here.
Jason Sikora here.
Yeah. Ours isn't quite this fancy.
If I was doing it by myself, it would be a little bit different production.
So we called it the Virtual Casserole because we do want to share that warmth. And I feel like right now with the technology overload, that people are really hungry sometimes for human connection. And hopefully the virtual casserole can offer that. We call it warmth, kindness, and some really good cheese. And
I like that.
We tell stories. Right now we're doing the virtual casserole world domination tour, where we're trying to have a different...
You're thinking small there, huh?
Yeah. But what that means is we're just trying to interview someone from each of the 50 states.
That's awesome.
So that we can get out of our own little bubble and tell people stories from other places as well.
Well, when you talk to the Pennsylvania people, you can ask them about the edible underwear.
Edible underwear,
yeah.
We have not done Pennsylvania yet, so we will. We'll ask about that.
And go back and look at that map, So... tell me about this. I'm learning that locally in Lafayette, Louisiana, and Acadiana, many people know about podcasts and many people don't. And so it's almost an uphill climb to people like Discover Lafayette. I know they're going to love Virtual Casserole. I'm sure they do. But getting them to understand the podcast mechanism that you can just go to your phone, download the app on any phone, and then just say, I want to listen to Virtual Casserole or Discover Lafayette. And it comes to you without you doing anything.
Right.
And you actually get a little pop-up every time there's a new
one's available.
That is what I'm having to work on. And I'm happy to do it. But it's such a wonderful medium because it's like Netflix. You can listen to it when it comes out, or you can listen to it a month later and binge on
at
Jan and
leisure.
Jan, but that's what I'm learning, that I'm having to teach that also.
It's funny. I was at a birthday dinner with some friends last night, and one of the ladies there was like going on about how she loved the Virtual Casserole, and she had listened to it all the way to New Orleans and back, and she felt like she'd spent, several hours with me and Linda, who she's never met, but she feels like now is her new best friend. And,
that's really nice.
It's genuine stuff.
Yeah.
And, just like the work that you're doing with Discover Life.
Thank you.
And I think that spread the word. Show your mama how to do a podcast.
Yeah. And your dad and your grandparents.
Right.
I've had people, I've made some of them while they're here. You have to subscribe.
Right.
Because for us, that helps us keep this going.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have an audience to make it worthwhile.
And you also, it's kind of like anything else. So you have to do it for a while to give it the chance to grow.
Yeah.
So.
I'm really fortunate to be here with Raider Solutions. I can't get their name in enough because it is difficult. I think it'd be difficult for me, Jan, to be doing the sound, even if I could do it, and be thinking about my guest. Because I want to be able to listen and not be thinking, oh, she leaned into the
right.
microphone, or maybe there's some noise happening and I need to edit. So it's a challenge.
One of our first episodes, I will tell you this, I sound great.
You do?
But I'm the only track recorded.
Oh.
So it'll
so can
be me
you go
talking.
Back and edit?
It didn't record anybody else.
The
I don't
second
know
microphone
why.
Was off. Yeah.
It just anyway.
Oh,
so
she's on the phone from
she's on the phone, and we did it the same way we had done it previously. Mm-hmm. It always worked, but for whatever reason, for that episode.
Well, there's something to be said too. Sorry, I had to jump
yeah,
in.
You had to jump in, Jason.
Well, I can give you some audio tips because the skill set of doing this and technically. And what you guys do is completely different, right? This is all very technical and just making sure that this cable is plugged into that and getting signal. And then a little bit of schooling on how to make this sound better in post. But I can't do that. I can't write and I can't interview. So don't feel bad, right?
Well, I appreciate those kind words.
I can give you some tips because this really isn't rocket science, right? This has been around for 100 years. Well, so.
And I do know that a lot of people do that. They'll use their iPhones or they'll use, you know, good equipment. The sound mm-hmm. is good. But things do happen, and you want to be able to monitor. Because yep. we've had some guests on, Jan, they'd be speaking at a low, you know, rate mm-hmm. of just very low. And then we'd go live, and they'd start really very loud.
So I start jumping at the faders, yeah.
Yeah. But you don't know till you're doing it. Right, so, right. yeah.
But what happened is, you know, it's kind of like it was a tough call, but I had to call the guest, who was a federal defender for the state of Alabama, and tell her that I had made a huge mistake, mm-hmm. and that is not a call that I wanted to make, but I had to do it. And then she was generous enough to come back on
Great.
And do another episode with us. So, you know.
She was understanding.
You just have to
yeah.
keep plugging away.
Right.
Not get discouraged.
Right. Well, on a similar note about good feelings, I read that a trip to Scotland inspired you, and you have officially declared the month of August to be the feel-good festival.
That's right.
Now, is that every day of August?
Every
is
day of August is
the,
a feel-good festival.
The hottest
yes.
Month, mm-hmm. unless mm-hmm. September is the hottest, but
yeah.
typically August is.
Yeah.
So
I'm
what's up
now.
With that?
Well, when I was in Scotland in October, I got there before my friends did, and I was doing some work, actually, is why I went to Scotland. I had a client and was doing a little bit of work.
Oh, and, wow, good clients. Huh?
Yeah, it was exciting. Yeah. And so, but I had some time, and I went to this, it was an old manor home, and they had made it into this beautiful little shopping area with one of a kind. It was just lovely. And in the middle of it, there was, I think, what was formerly the carriage house. And it was an old bookstore that they had turned into a bookstore.
Wow.
And so there were like all these people walking in. And I said, what's happening? And they said, it's the Feel Good Festival. And I said, what is this? Well, except they said it in this beautiful Scottish accent. It's the Feel Good Festival. I don't know. I can't do accents. So I got them to explain. And so the Feel Good Festival was just this county-wide mm-hmm. festival. And anyone could submit events, and the whole thing was about helping people feel better. And theirs has a more of an emphasis on like removing the stigma from mental health issues and just
emotional,
physical, mm-hmm. just feeling good. Mm-hmm. And I just love that idea. And I talked to several people locally about, you know, you should do a Feel Good Festival. And then I thought, well, nobody else seems to be mm-hmm. jumping on this one. I'm just going to make it happen.
I love it. So you can be anywhere any place?
Any place. And I'm asking people to contact me, mm-hmm. and I will send them a form to fill out, because I do want to put all the events associated with the Feel Good Festival on a website. We're going to make a poster. You know, anything that helps. The theme for our Feel Good Festival, theirs in Scotland was reclaim, and they were trying to reclaim their heritage, reclaim their sites. Okay. But ours, I thought for the first year, is going to be cool because I hate hot weather. I'm not at my best in hot weather. So I thought August would be a perfect time for the Feel Good Festival mm-hmm. because we want to try to keep a better perspective.
Yeah.
So
I have an idea. I'm going to run this by Kelly Swift that's here. When we go to Siesta Key, Florida, it's actually, I love Acadiana, but if I'm going to get away, I love South Florida. And every Sunday night before dusk, I don't know what they call it, but And Jason, you would love this. I know you're always looking for good drummers, but they have like a free flow kind of hundreds of people show up and these people play the bongo drums or they play these big drums. And people come in with gypsy costumes. People come in with hula hoops. They do cartwheels. And we will go on Sunday nights and just sit there, and you'll see people from all over the world dressed up and really all kinds of dressed mm-hmm. up and not dressed up, mm-hmm. you know, on the beach. But people just feel good. Little children, older people, they dance together, but everybody has a big smile on their face. And I know that's the feeling
Jan,
you're looking for.
You need that is Hula your hoops? Feel-good festival
I
event,
I know,
girl.
But where will we do that? Downtown, maybe in the park?
Well,
maybe
I mean,
by
the question
fountains?
Is, do you want to do it outside or inside?
Well, you want to be cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'd have to think about this.
But maybe in the fountains. I don't know, but
I've
I love that idea.
I've never seen anything like that. I mean, it's just, it's really organic, though. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it started organically with people just...
And we probably have to have someone who knows how to lead drum circles.
Well, Jason's always looking for drummers. Do you know how to drum?
I do know how to drum.
Okay.
Yes. I played drums in high school.
I have old bongo drums, but that won't quite get the vibe we need.
No.
You know?
But there's some drummers I know that would probably love to do this. That,
and it's
that
all
could
just,
lead a, yeah, a drum
there's
circle.
There's no song. It's just kind of a...
Yeah, it's bump, a beat.
Bump, bump,
mm-hmm.
bump,
I've done drum circles.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's I don't know why that beat is so amazing. But
and it just captures everybody. From mm-hmm. little children love it, but really older people feel free. Mm-hmm. To just have a good time.
All right. You've got your feel-good festival
okay.
right there, girl.
We'll have to think about this, Kelly. In August, we'll have to come up with a date before you go back to school. So, well, Jan, is there anything that you would like to get in? Any advice maybe for businesses? If we could maybe have you think about that. Advice you would give a business that you might represent one day about what they can do to tell their story better. Is there anything that...
I would think the very first piece of advice that I would give is they need to recognize their story. They need to discover mm-hmm. their own story, because a lot of times businesses take so much of what they do for granted, or they're not seeing it with what I call a news eye, that they miss these mm-hmm. opportunities. So that would be the first thing. And sometimes that might require bringing someone else in. And it doesn't have to be me, doesn't have to be a PR person. You know, if you're on a real budget, it could just be someone who you know is a good storyteller mm-hmm. to tell them all about what's going on in your business.
Right.
And so that'd be the first thing. That's important. And then from there, you can start getting that story out there.
Mm-hmm.
But and you can do that with your own social media, with traditional media, mm-hmm. and that ability to bounce back, you know, make the most of any traditional media on social media and keep that going is powerful. I mean, I think that for Raider, for example, I think that figuring out Raider's story to tell has made a difference for mm-hmm. this company. I do.
And it's a compelling story, given mm-hmm. the background of Chris's dad, you know, Norris mm-hmm. Raider, and mm-hmm. and how Chris evolved into having this computer, high-tech mm-hmm. technology solution and company. Who would have seen that from Norris Raider's lumber company? But here it is.
And also just that they're nice mm-hmm. folks.
Yeah.
And they have an interest in bettering the community mm-hmm. and doing what they can do to make the community a better place.
Yeah,
that's a good story.
It is a good story. And it makes you trust people when you
right.
get to know them better. So.
Right. You know, Raider was recently named Small Business of the mm-hmm. Year by Junior Achievement. And I think that's in large part due to all of the volunteer work and service the organization has done, which is another part of the story of Raider.
Well, I think we're giving you credit for that one.
Oh, well, I don't get credit because y'all are the ones who are
it's
doing the
team.
Hard work.
It's a team effort because Jan can give you advice, but you guys have to implement it.
Well, we went 16 years without knowing what our story was. Right. But we were growing so fast and nobody still knew who we were because we didn't know who we were. Mm-hmm. And so we had hired Jan on to work with us to figure that out. And so our whole marketing campaign, our tagline, I mean, that all came from her working with us to figure out who we were.
Oh, you just want it to work. You came up with that.
Yeah. And that and Jacob Landry said that.
Mm-hmm.
But when
that's
he
so
said
true.
When
it's
he
like,
said it,
it
we're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what mm-hmm. the deal is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So and I think that for businesses that might not have the budget to hire someone. You know somebody who can recognize stories. Just tell your business's story to somebody else. Literally, just tell it to somebody else. Give them a tour of your facility. You know, Chris Rader loves to give people tours. Mm-hmm. And that's about storytelling. You know, that's about making a human connection also.
Wow. Yeah.
And giving someone a tour of your store or your production facility, whatever it is, that's about making human connections, and that's public relations.
But wait, Chris would go as far as to show you the bathroom. This is the bathroom.
But it's very impressive. You know? Yeah. I mean, why not show it? Jason, do you have any questions?
I do. Where have you been that... I'm sorry, what's going to be number 50? Country number 50.
Oh, well, it's country 49's got to come before 50. And before I answer that, let me say this. If anybody out there has an idea for a feel-good festival event... please email me at janrisher@gmail.com. It's janrisher@gmail.com. And I'll get you the form to fill out. And I need to get all those in. I think it's by June the 17th. All right. So the answer to that question of what is country number 49, what's country number 50, is I am not certain. I had really wanted to go to Iceland.
Oh, gosh.
Because, again, I am thinking about cool. And I also want to see the Northern Lights. So that's, you know, I have to head north for that. And I have recently made some friends in Norway. I had some old friends in Norway, but I made some new friends in Norway who have invited me over. I'm thinking Norway might be on the horizon. Okay. But I also want to go to Ecuador. See how excited I get whenever I start talking about this? I also really want to go to Ecuador. I've never been to South America. I have never been to South America.
Oh, okay.
So I need to make that happen.
That's exciting, Jim.
Yeah.
And then what's your favorite country besides the United States, of course?
Well, the first country where I lived was Slovakia, and it's not a country that many people have visited, but I love me some Slovakia, and I love Slovak people, and it was just, here's something else. I had never flown on a plane until I was 23 years old.
Wow.
And all of the traveling that I have done has been either through teaching English as a second language, mm-hmm. or adopting our daughter, or I won a journalism fellowship. I mean, nothing that I've done has ever been extravagant. So if you think, oh, she's been to 48 countries, that's just because it was important to me, and I made it happen. And I, you know, on the advice of a New York taxi driver, I went to West Africa on a airlines at that time that was called Air Afrique, and by myself.
Sounds kind of dicey. Yeah.
It was fantastic. But Slovakia, and then that trip I took in October to Scotland, that was a magical trip. I'd never been to Scotland before, and it was the first time I've ever been in a foreign place, and it was so familiar to me. You know, they were speaking my language. Everybody looked like my Aunt Hazel or Uncle Dennis, you know.
Are you Scottish? Do you know?
But my family is largely from the UK.
Yeah.
And lots of Scottish roots, but it was just so familiar. Their sense of humor was very much like my family's sense of humor.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
That's wonderful.
Oh, good. Then I have two questions that have more to do with your career and your profession, and you're extremely busy. But yet you keep on piling more things on, like this podcast. Is there something else that you haven't done yet in your professional career that you think you'd like to try, that you just haven't got around to yet?
Let's think here.
Well, flight attendant. Maybe you can see more countries.
I'm sure there is. You know, I really like stretching my brain. And I like... putting myself, the most alive I feel in my best times are when I'm in a place where I don't understand what's going on.
Okay.
I love being in foreign countries when I don't speak any of the language and I'm just having to figure it out. Because then, to me, you can only focus on what's absolutely most important. You know, you can't focus on any of the peripheral stuff. Right. And so another great example of that is, I don't know if any of you have ever square danced, but I'm not a good square dancer, but I love square dances because you have to focus so hard on what's going on. And so I'm sure that something else will come along that I'm not familiar with.
It seems like you run into those anyways. As by the nature of your work. Mm-hmm. And then my go-to question, again, like peel the curtain back a little bit. What's something that you do in your profession, in your career, that most people wouldn't know? It would be a surprise to them, maybe.
Mm. There's a lot of tediousness. And tediousness does not come naturally to me. But the fact that sometimes you literally have to go through and make sure that every, for example, I recently did wrote a series of articles for a medical institution. And, you know, this is something you would never think about. But is healthcare one word or is healthcare two words?
Because they'll know if you don't get it right.
Well, but and different people have different opinions on that. And so to have a consistent writing style that goes far beyond if healthcare is one or two words.
Right.
But, you know, for example, you should never capitalize someone's title. Well, that's not true. There are rare occasions when you should have capitalized someone's title. And yet most businesses do because they think it makes it seem more important. But I recommend that every business have a style guide and that you understand what that means and that you're consistent. Because, you know, do you use the Oxford comma or not? We use AP style, so we don't typically use the Oxford comma. There are other people who fight us on that. Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot of detail
Detail that is not fun. It is not sexy.
But before you hit send or before you publish, you really need to go
through that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's those kind of things that I don't think that people would think about that.
Right. I use Grammarly. It kind of catches me as I go. And the other day I struggled over ambiance. And there's two ways to spell it, A and E. And then I looked up, they go, well, it's actually A, but more people use E. And I thought, well, what do I do? So I went with what more people do so that people wouldn't question, does she not know how to spell?
And then if you had a business style guide and that was a word that you used often, you would add that to your business guide.
Yeah.
So every business should have a style guide because the most important thing is to be consistent.
Mm-hmm. And to be polished.
Yeah. Well, and to be right.
To be right. You can be polished or wrong.
Well, thank you for being here. You've interviewed me before. Now I get to interview you.
Yeah. I know. I am very rarely on this side of the interview chair. So thank y'all for the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun.
What an opportunity we've had as today's guest, Jan Rischer. She's a freelance writer, writes for the Daily Advertiser, and she has Shift Key and I guess just janrischer.com. You still have
I don't post on it as often as I used to because I have learned that once you put it on the internet, it's there. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever going to sell it, which I'm going to do, you know, for my book,
right?
You know, there's a combativeness there.
So
that goes back to that whole thing of
what are you going to focus on?
What are you going to focus on? Right. And storytelling, internet changing, disrupting media.
Well, we'll focus on Shift Key then and the Virtual Casserole, Jan Rischer's new podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Sikora and Raider Solutions, as always, for your professionalism and your kindness in helping Discover Lafayette continue. And for our listeners, please check out this podcast and all of our podcasts on discoverlafayette.net. I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.